Blog Talk Radio.
What's the topic? We'll never run out of options. Fatherhood to justice, O'Shea and Mark dropped the knowledge. These are times where we try for a peace of mind, organize and then reignite with these words from the other side.
We're two good brothers, unpacked. Meaningful conversations centered in solutions that transmute the systemic energy of being black in America, where each episode is packed with inspirational messages and thought-provoking special guests. Come join us on the other side.
You're listening to E-Water Radio, K-E-W-R-D-B.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of E-Water Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of E-Water Radio, K-E-W-R-D-B, or its affiliates.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the other side, the side of knowledge, the side of compassion, the side of healing, the side of laughter. Do I have my partner in knowledge with me, O'Shea Luja? Are you on the other side, brother?
Yes, brother. I am on the other side, and I'm so excited to be on the other side, brother, because it's, you know, it's about that time. And every time when it comes up, I joyfully celebrate being on the other side with my brother Mark Winkler.
There you go, brother. It is a celebration, brother, because it's a beautiful thing to be in communion of thought, thinking about how to make things, how to make us grow and thrive as a community. Right, and that's what we try to do here on the other side. So I'm always enthralled, brother. That's one of my words. I'm enthralled.
Oh, man, that's a big one. Oh, that's a big one right there, man.
To be on the other side. We have a wonderful show planned for you guys. We're going to be talking about the intersections of art, mental health, and social justice. We have a very special guest we're going to be introducing in just a brief moment. But we wanted to, let's introduce her now, just to let the people know who we will be having on here with us. It's Thea Monier. Are you with us, Thea, on the other side?
I am. I feel like I got rental property, vacation property set up on the other side. I'm not
you
even
are,
here. I'm invested. I got property.
You absolutely do. You have real estate established on the other side. You came and you saw the other side and you said, I like it over here.
So, I like it over here. I just frequently be able to, you know, call this home.
Well, we're always excited to have Thea with us. She brings a refreshing outlook on subject matters. She's doing so much out there. Just real brief, just tell everyone some exciting things that's going on in your world. One of the things I know is that you have a book coming out called Blood and Bahareka, and there's so much excitement around that. Just tell everyone a little bit about that and a couple of the other things that you're doing.
Yeah, so we decided to self-publish and self-distribute through our own press, Allenday Press, Blood and Bahareke, which is, it's just been one of those things about trusting what comes through you, and then not putting it in the hands of the powers that be, which we'll talk about, you know, later in the show, right? Like really holding on to what's ours and trusting and believing in it. So we're really excited about that. The official release is May 8th. We did have folks pre-order, and those books are headed to those hands now. So we're very excited. We're also celebrating the one-year anniversary of Shaping the Shift podcast, and we have, you know, amassed over 30,000 downloads in 42 countries in a year. So we have a lot to celebrate about impact and people, you know, shift shaping and shaping the shifts that are coming in and out of their life, and the power of podcasting, which is another artistic medium that's growing and a great resource for social justice, as we'll discuss soon. So those are some of the standouts right now.
Beautiful, beautiful. And blood and bahareke, what does, of course I know what blood means, but bahareke, explain that a little bit and explain the relationship between the two words.
Sure. Bahareke, like in parts of the Caribbean, parts of Central America, is used to describe like a light rain. It's like heavier than dew or drizzle, but it's not quite rain. Really refreshing, really beautiful. And it symbolizes for me in the book my father's side of the family, which is from that region. And then blood is my mother's side of the family, which is talks about the story of them in Maryland, Anne Arundel County. So it's, you know, part of the family that stays and stays on the land and passes down the land. And then the part of the family that moves with like water, right, immigrated from one space to another space and at times were taken by force and at times by choice. And so it kind of, those stories parallel to make me. And so that's part of what the book is about, that biological, geographical lineage, but also about our spiritual lineage along the way.
That's exciting. And I know it's going to reverberate strongly in the community. And I'm looking forward to it coming out. I've been around the planning of it because, spoiler alert, Thea is actually my wife, so I've been around the planning.
Part owner of this vacation property.
yes, and so I've been elevated just being around the process. So I'm excited for it to come out because I know it's going to really be very meaningful when it gets into the community. Speaking of the community, we want to just, as always, we want to just do some acknowledgments of our brothers and sisters who have left us violently and by natural causes. And we want to start with one who passed, who was killed last year, George Floyd. His trial came to an end, and there was a sigh of relief around the world when they announced the verdict of Derek Chauvin, guilty on all three charges, manslaughter in the second and third degree. And there was a sigh of relief because I think everyone was anticipating a repeat of the uprisings, of the show of dissatisfaction if Derek Chauvin would not have gotten his just due for taking George Floyd's life for nearly 9 minutes sitting on his neck with his knee. But then as we began to exhale, we took a moment to exhale, we found out in Ohio, our young sister, Micaiah Bryant, 15 years old, was shot by a police officer. He was called to a situation where there was a fight going on, and Micaiah's younger sister called the police, and Micaiah was out there trying to defend herself. And no more than 20 or 22 seconds upon the police arriving did Micaiah lose her life. There's a lot of controversy around that still. A lot of people are trying to say that the police are not culpable in this situation. The video is circulating. I saw the video. I watched it. I listened to Micaiah's sister talk about it. I read reports about it. And I left away thinking that there was a lot of people responsible, but everyone except Micaiah. That's how I left this situation thinking. But Micaiah Bryant was not responsible for her death. She was defending herself against adults. She was in a foster home, and there were adults who were called there by the foster mother to beat up Micaiah. So she was defending herself. So she is not to blame for her death. That much I can say. I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts on that. Thea or O'Shea, do you guys have any thoughts on that particular subject?
Man, just to be able to, hold space for that energy and the capacity for us all to agree and continue to, you know, light candles and call forth, you know, the names of, you know, our most recent ancestors. You know, I feel that that's very special to do, and that's where the magic happens, that we do not forget.
Absolutely. I agree. We should not forget. We should not. I mean, it's, I hate just the whole hashtag thing, but, you know, any way that we can keep her name in the public consciousness, we should do. Thea, what about you? Do you have any thoughts about Makaya?
I mean, you know, I think for me, all of it is always us witnessing a very expressed form of what the impact of systemic racism, right? That all these parties that are involved in these systems, ultimately it leads to these outward expressions of this violence that we all witness. And there's, they keep happening because we don't deal with root causes. We don't want to call this a racist country. We don't want to say that police are derivatives of slave patrol. And we don't want to imagine a society that doesn't require police, even though we know that societies don't require police, neighborhoods don't require police. We just want to, we just refuse to imagine differently and to hold a whole social structure accountable, because we can go cop by cop by cop, but the reality is they are being trained this way. And someone's approving it. Someone's paying for the training, right? And someone's passing the law that's allowing for all of this to happen. So there's just way bigger questions and way bigger, way more people accountable. But I also just feel like many of us refuse to imagine, what would it take to create a society that does not require cops? I don't necessarily feel like society requires cops. I feel like cops bring into spaces, depending on the space that they're in, particularly black spaces, an element of violence. They introduce it. When you think about how many gangs started, it was in protection from cops. So in those communities, do they need cops? And I think that's a fair question that people don't want to sit with, because they just say, oh, well, we need cops. Like they say, oh, we need, you know, to go to school this way or to be receive medicine this way. They don't want to do the work of saying, well, why, right? If we just change the values of the society and we make those the norm, then the requirement for forced violence to patrol streets goes away. So I think for me, it always just goes there. Like, it's always like, that's the conversation I'm looking for. And that I hope we have
I think, you know, I 100% with you, agree with you there. I think that the broader conversation is what's the purpose and the role of police in the community, and how can with their presence, does it address what their original purpose, well, their originally stated purpose after the 18th and 19th century, they were supposed to be there to protect and serve. So if we ask, is there protection going on? Is there serving going on? And in what way? And the answer in our community is definitively no. So that how can we move towards that, where in such a methodical way where people feel, one, they still feel protected because the elements that require police are still there. So while we're working on that, then how can we begin to replace those who are not there serving our interest? Right. And so there's a lot of conversation. So there's ongoing conversation about reform.
Yeah, because part of that is the redirection, reallocation of money. Right. So the elements that are there that supposedly the police are protecting against.
Right.
Are under resourced. Right. So they're a huge drain of income on a city that is a black. They take a lot of money, more than education, more than jobs.
Sure.
And so I do think it's worth the try to take a city, remove the cops, infuse that money back into education, arts programs, back into job placement, infuse and give grants to your entrepreneurs so that they can hire new people and put proper food in that environment and see if they still need police. I thought people will have enough, one, courage, like enough confidence in themselves. They will start checking stuff in the community on their own, right, because they will feel valued. and they will have value in that space. But they are really a huge line item on that budget.
Let me ask something. In terms of, you know, policing in America, it's very important that we zoom in to, you know, their practices from the get-go. It's been a systemic oppression of force, right? So when you're looking at where we all are in Los Angeles, you know, it was an open secret that, you know, in the early 1900s, 1930s, 40s, 50s, racist cops was recruited from the South to come out to Los Angeles to do what they do. So with that being said, when we're talking about the system being able to be reimagined, you know, realistically, I feel that, you know, ebony people, black and brown people would be better off coming up with their own polices, quote-unquote, right? Uh-huh. And then moving into the energy of what the Black Panthers was even doing out in Watts, Compton, Inglewood, you know, protecting the community. So I feel that they were observing and, quote-unquote, reporting. However, it was very effective because, you know, when they would show up on the scene, you know, the police had to think twice about how they moved about. Now with this whole video era, social media era, you know, if we start putting funds that we already have into policing, or not even policing, I don't want to use that word, even protecting our own communities, I think that would be very, very powerful. And that is happening in some communities, but I really feel that if we created this green book of sorts of communities doing this, it would be really powerful.
Absolutely.
Well, see, that's the thing. There's so many organizations that are in existence now. I created a website called the United Diaspora Improvement Network. It's UDN.black. And it's I have maybe 100, 150 organizations on there. And so to Thea's point, these organizations are largely underfunded.
Right.
And they are doing the work that if they were funded properly by private sources and governmental sources, that a lot of the things that a lot of the reasons or the behaviors that police get called on would be addressed. And those behaviors are not sometimes insidious. Sometimes those behaviors are born out of needs largely. And so to feed themselves, take care of their families. And so, you know, organizations do exist. So I do agree with you, Thea, that shifting funding, because there's multi-millions of dollars that's spent, you know, yearly on policing, things that they just don't need, building up a militaristic style of policing. You mentioned about the training. There's a guy named Dan Grossman. I want everyone to look him up, Dan Grossman. He does police training around the country. And his philosophy is that talking to police officers, if you kill someone, don't be mad about that. Be happy because you stopped the predator. You stopped someone from taking someone else's life. Just on the basis of that, if someone is receiving that training and then that person is not from the community where they are policing and they're put into that dynamic, they probably see everyone as predators, potential predators. So training has to be addressed, and ultimately funding and redirecting of funds. So I just want to just move on, but I do want to say that I wholeheartedly agree with both you and O'Shea. Just want to just go through a couple of more acknowledgments. We want to acknowledge our brother Andre Brown from North Carolina, who was shot 5 times by a police officer, and a judge recently said that he's not going to release the full body of footage from the shooting until maybe 30 to 45 days while the investigation goes on. The family has been pushing for the footage to be released. Dante Wright, 20-year-old, who was shot at a routine stop, and the officer said she, 26 years on the force, said she grabbed for her taser. She thought she was, but she actually grabbed her gun. Adam Toledo, a 13-year-old from Chicago, Illinois, was shot. He was told to raise his hands. He did so, and he was shot anyway. So we want to hold space for all of these brothers and sisters We also want to acknowledge the passing of Shock G and Black Rob, two great hip-hop legends. We want to hold space for their families and keep them in our thoughts. And as we move, as we segue into a conversation about the intersection of social justice, we touched on it just a tad bit, but we're going to explore this now. But before we do that, we're going to ask Thea to bless us with a poem, and then we're going to launch into our conversation. Is that okay, Thea?
That is okay.
Okay.
So this piece is called Purple Files. It was inspired when I was starting off in my work and worked at a law center that represented foster youth. As we lay in green pastures and rest beside the still waters, I had to give that shout out real quick. Okay, I'm focused. Here we go. As we lay in green pastures and rest beside the still waters, we fail to see this cup is running over. Fail to see the water rising past ankles to knees or to hear the desperate screams of the drowning. It is far more comforting for us to believe that they are all just hydrophobic. Society's response to their cries is to create systems, be it foster, educational, or prison, cleverly disguised as helping hands reaching out to muddy water populations, offering salvation while all the while refusing to get dirty, flirting with the illusion of unity while systematically avoiding issues plaguing low-income communities. See, I see that disparity. Watch Purple Files grow from infancy to teen, change to Manila, trade in their lives for orange jumpsuit or army green. It seems the people have been misled to believe that these institutions were placed here for our benefit. The general public doesn't question it. Most believe the youth to be voiceless because they choose to suffer in silence. Others will act out in violence, while still there will be the few who choose to use the pen to forge their rebellion. Battalions of ballerinas and musicians who live by a creed that crescendos off the walls of should-be-empty group homes and trickles down tear-stained windows. See, they know they are a force to be reckoned with, a power to be recognized, as raw as an undisturbed diamond and as valuable as undiscovered oil beneath the earth's surface. All three have monumental purpose when placed into the right hands, but far too often they are not. Forced onto city blocks to be educated in that school of hard knocks, but not all of our children will fall victim to a system. Picasso still paints pictures using 14-year-old fingertips and spray cans, writing in block letters and languages few can understand. See, they can still feel the color in their veins. It's a shame most of us are too grown to appreciate, too stoned to see the poetry in your average 15-year-old MC's hip-hop lyrics, too afraid to crack open his metaphor, see the pain in his pores and deal with it. Mistake Jesse Owens for a hoodlum hopping ghetto fences as though the next step is the only thing that matters. Evidence of this illusion can all be shattered. Living artifacts of the art, in fact, they memorialize our ancestors with their passion, turn dreams into action with few stars to wish upon, only the prayer that some still exist beyond the smog and the gun smoke, provoked often, learning their craft in the most distracting of environments, staying focused on hard work and their mom's early retirement, and we forget to remind them of their value, lose their compliments amidst our disdain for their peers, yet and still they raise themselves up throughout those pivotal years. God bless the child who wipes away his own tears, who tap dances to music that only his ears can hear, practices plies, leaps, and backflips without fear, who strives for the gold even though nobody shows up to cheer. Here's to you, the youth whose truth gets buried beneath media stereotypes funded by federal dollars, raised by blue collars that you will never have to wear. I swear, our children are not lost. This future, our future, is right here.
Mm. Woo! Snap, snap, snap. That, yes, snap, crackle, pop.
Snap, crackle, pop.
Yes, yes, yes. So many lines in that piece, you know, they were just jumping out, you know, the learning their craft in the most destruction of environments. You know, it just makes me think of, yeah, how many ebony people, you know, black and brown across this country have to learn and buckle down their craft, their skill sets, mm-hmm. their gifts, and hone them in war zones. And it's like, right. Wow, yes, Tia, like right. Everything. That was a real strong piece.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That was beautiful. And O'Shea, that last part you just said, actually, it leads me perfectly to my to my first question, I'm going to throw out there, and for both of you, really, because you're both artists, creators, writers, creating their craft in adverse situations produces a certain type of art, normally, right? And we've seen this with wonderful artists like Sonia Sanchez, Mary Baraka, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Maya Angelou, Lorraine Hansberry, Toni Morrison, Nikki Giovanni. So my first question is, what is the role of an artist in the, especially during times like this? What is the role of an artist? Is that creator, should that creator be responsible for creating art that speaks to the dynamics of his or her time?
Absolutely. You know, if I may jump in, when I say absolutely, I'm speaking in terms of the artist as it relates to the griot, the griot, the West African storyteller. You know, it's an oral tradition, right? And it's you know, passed down orally. So in that, speaking of poetry, because it is National Poetry Month, I think that is a huge responsibility, because the griot was able to hold the history, the culture, and the tradition of its village. So it was revered more than the doctors or the kings and queens. They were that important in the society. So the role is, as Father Amdia, the Washed Prophets, would say, to express a universal truth. And that's very empowering for the universe, not just the artist's truth, not just writing or creating how you feel. You can do that as a foundation, but when you're engaging in this creative process, you would expand out of your quote-unquote truth and start to speak to the universal truth, because it's a charge, it's an obligation, it's something that must happen for the artist, for the poet, you know. So that's what I feel, you know, a little bit about what I feel. I could talk all day about that conversation. But, yes, to explore and express a universal truth, because poetry is a medium for truth, right? And that's what I feel that the poet especially should be expressing, the universal truth.
Dear, what are your thoughts about that?
You know, I think the answer is yes, and I think that the expression of those times can look very different depending on the artist. So I think of Octavia Butler, right, who, you know, Octavia was definitely aware of the time. She was living in the time, but her work projected out of the time into, you know, what could be ahead, or sometimes into space, or sometimes into new species, or sometimes into, like, her work really did transcend what we knew to be realities at times and help us imagine new realities. And so I think, you know, sometimes that documentation of the times looks very familiar to us, or it's our communities, or it's our neighborhoods, or things we know. But there are also artists who are ahead of their time, and who have a role in evolving us. So there's artists who document us, and then there's artists who, like, evolve us and, like, get us to think outside of where we are at the given time. But all of it, first and foremost, an artist's job is to be fully expressed, right, to give themselves full permission to be fully liberated beings and fully express themselves, because that example for all of us gives us something to hope for and to look for in ourselves, you know? And then I agree, yeah, that to document the times, but also to project us out and beyond. Like, the Black imagination is so powerful. Like, that's why we're here. Somebody has to imagine us being here in circumstances where they were not certain we would be here. And so I think that there's also that power of the Black imagination that artists, we have to let them ride and follow at times.
We're not a monolithic community, right? We're definitely not a monolithic community, and artists are not, you know, singular in their thoughts, right? Artists are complex human beings, and they so many different experiences go through them. And I agree that how they express those experiences are different, the different perspectives, right? But there is the thought that when you are living in a certain time, right, when there's a certain mm-hmm. experience happening, if you're not speaking directly to that experience, like if your art doesn't speak to police brutality in some way, if your art doesn't speak to food scarcity or health crisis, then you are squandering your talent and you are abusing, abuse is too strong of a word, I would say, but definitely you are not serving the community. So the question should be, should black artists be shamed in some way if they're not speaking to, if they're not speaking to the times? Like Curtis Mayfield, he dropped something, he dropped an album that his songs definitely, even though it was part of a soundtrack, right, Superfly, if you listen to the soundtrack, he spoke heavily to what was going on. It's almost as if you can listen to it today and still say it's relevant. Artists like Marvin Gaye, who was a crooner when he first started, but he dropped one of the definitive, I wouldn't say protest, but conscious songs, What's Going On. So should an artist, in their diversity, if they're not speaking to what's happening, should they be shamed? Or as we say today, should they be canceled?
I would say no, because I feel that, you know, art must be expressed. And when we're talking about, for the sake of, again, national poetry, money, the poet's job is to express. So should they be shamed for not expressing what's going on in the world? Absolutely not, because, you know, generally, an artist, if you're not studying other artists, if you're not studying the history and the lineage of art, right, you have to read other poets. You have to be able to acknowledge other poets to even tap into that thread, to know where your thread is as an artist. And if you're not doing that homework to study to show thyself approved, absolutely you should not be shamed, because you just do not know. And that's okay too. However, there's enough artists that do know and that can, that are, not can, that are speaking to the times. It's just not publicized like all the junk is, like all the low vibrational art and poetry is, music is. But when you're dealing in publicizing that energy of the ones that know, it's a gnosis, it's a knowing, I feel you would get more of that, and it would reverberate all across the world. However, if you're not, you know, studied in this regard, like, it's real tough to hold someone accountable, brother, for something that they don't even, they've never tapped into. And that too is okay. Long as they're creating, that's good enough. And if you keep creating, maybe you can expand into creating positive change in your life first, and then it'll exude from your life onto other people's lives.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
You know, to quote KRS-One, I believe, y'all can check me if I'm wrong, too many MCs take that word MC lightly. They can't move a crowd, not even slightly. I'm going to say the other version of what O'Shea was saying, which is that, you know, the term artist is used liberally, right? And that thread he's talking about is like lineage. That lineage doesn't necessarily have to be biological, right? But like I'm of the lineage. Clearly,
right.
I'm a child influenced by Octavia Butler,
yeah.
Toni Morrison, my aunt, right? So and so, I don't just call myself a poet or call myself a writer without honoring the lineage, you know?
Right.
And now, is that something you can do? I mean, people can do whatever they want, right? The evidence of whether or not they really understand their role and power in the society as an artist is evident by the impact. So I would say, you know, folks like that, they may make some money on the side, not nearly as much as they acting like they made on Instagram, but they may make some money. But will they be a spike on the timeline, right? Like, you know, for all his problems, it is indisputable that Kanye was a spike on the timeline. But mm-hmm. Kanye could also fight lineage. He could tell mm-hmm. you who he studied, who motivated
yes,
him. And
Absolutely.
So, like, he's an artist, right? And he don't always directly talk about what's happening, but at the same time, like, I can see the lineage in his work.
Right,
and
right.
So I think it's like, and he'll be a cycle. Now, it's been a million littles and babies and somethings in between there. I don't know none of their names, right? I mean, none of their names, nor they sound alike to me. I don't know them. And they will walk around here and be like, they are artists, and they are free to say that. But if they don't have no lineage, then they won't be a spike on the timeline. And so when we
right.
talk about historically, when it's documented, which is when a lot of
right.
artists are really acknowledged, is when you look back at their body of work, when you look back at their
Absolutely.
Impact on the field itself,
yes.
right? Did
yes.
they elevate that field? Did they, like, he elevated music. He changed music for a period of time, right? So,
right.
like, then when you look back at all those features, then you say, okay, that artist changed the time. But I
yes.
don't think it just happens because you call yourself an artist.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, I'm a tread very lightly on this because I am not an artist per se, right? I've written a book. I have another book coming out. But that's a writer. But as an artist, right, one who creates music and poetry and drawing and painting and things of that nature, I'm not that person. So I'm a tread lightly with this statement. But, Oshay, you said something that some people don't know. And if they don't know, then, you know, how can we hold them responsible? I would say, like, there's a saying that goes, ignorance of the law is, you know, is no excuse, right? I think at a certain point, if you are in a dynamic, you know what's going on, and you make a choice. I think at a certain point, it's a choice for you not to delve into a certain subject matter and see how you can use your art and use your what exposure you have gotten, the benefits that you've gotten from people supporting you, not to give back in some way to elevate people. Now, elevation is not a singular thing, right? And that's the part I guess I go back and forth, because when Marvin Gaye was dropping What's Going On, you had the Jackson 5, I'm dating myself a little bit, the Jackson 5 dropping ABC, right? So there was party going on and there was thought music going on. So, again, we're not a monolithic community with our artists, but I do feel like if an artist has a big enough platform that at a certain point in their career, they have a responsibility either through creating a song or a piece like Octavia Butler or a book like Ta-Nehisi Coates or making a public statement to speak to what's going on in some way that brings attention to the problem and the people who are working on the problem, either to inspire them and the people who's creating the problem to give warning to them that we're watching you. That's my thought.
Let me add something, Mark and Thea. So in that vein, consider this. So, you know, young people growing up in these inner cities, right? You know, they are one of the hardest things personally that I've ever had to do in my life was to change my mind's state, right? It was uh-huh. very difficult, you know, even growing up in, you know, the inner city, growing up in Watts, like that whole energy, it was very difficult. And I've always been an artist, always been a writer. So with that being said, you know, a lot of our young brothers and sisters, though, Mark, they're out here, man, uh-huh. and to put, like, creating, like, Octavia Butler or Ta-Nehisi Coates or Marvin Gaye, man, that's a whole lot, man. People are just trying to wake up the next day, wake up today. Uh-huh. So with that being uh-huh. said, I'm thinking it's going to be very important for us to, you know, encourage creativity and then allow that to expand into whatever other mediums or whatever other array of colors that it's going to expand into. And I must say that even with one of my teachers, again, Father Amdia, the Watch Prophet, he's been dealing with the ever-evolving language, Black language, which is Ebonic. So a lot of the young artists today, they are speaking Black English and fluent Ebonics, but a lot of people are casting them away because they cannot understand that language. And I'm very fluent in that language because I speak it. So with that being said, I feel different because I'm like, man, these young people, man, they're doing what they can with what they got. They're making a way out of no way. And I feel that it'll be a little bit more expansive for the culture for us to, you know, just be okay, not with them creating, quote-unquote, low vibrational music, but they are speaking in another language. And oftentimes that's all that they know to communicate is through that language. And if we have to even encourage them, man, because when we walk down the street and we see them, many of us cross the street. Many of them don't say anything to us. And they know we do the same thing with their music. So it's very important that they're part of us. It's very important that we cultivate, nourish, and hold them close to us because they need us, and we need them as well.
Beautifully said, brother.
I think part of being in an oppressed group is we do have difficulty with just allowing us to be different even within the group. Like, I remember when at a certain point it was, you had Olivia Pope on, you had Cookie on Empire, and you had, you know, and everybody was so clinging to this Claire Huxtable image, right? And it was like, Claire Huxtable is super valid, but everybody here knows a Cookie. Everybody here knows a Cookie, right? Why are we acting like, and it's because of the white gaze, right? Like the
standard.
Fact that, that white people are looking at us, that we're like, you know, look, you got to look human, you got to look presentable, you got to look as what they think is valid, right?
Yes.
And so I think that most of us, like, just going back to what O'Shea was just saying, we don't have nothing to do with that young person when they're trying to sell that mixtape to us at a liquor store, at a grocery store. We passed by that brother. We ain't trying to take that CD. And then when he blew up.
And that was Nipsey Hussle. That was Nipsey Hussle.
Right.
That's what he was doing.
And when he blow up, then we want to put our expectations on what he should do when we didn't even buy the mixtape at the Ralph. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's like we have to look at how we can colonize each other in a way, right? Like, we aren't all going to be Martin Luther King, and that's okay.
Yeah.
We ain't all going to be Malcolm. We ain't all going to be Grady. We ain't all going to be Red Fox. We all going to be, and us giving ourselves the right to exist the way we want to exist is part of our liberation movement.
You know, that's a point. Both of you points well taken. I go back to the statement I made. We're not monolithic, right? And so I guess the summation of that is that if artists are not there, they should not be shamed. We should hold space for the creativity and encourage them, perhaps, but definitely support them because growth is possible anywhere. So, I want to just, as we got about 15 or 16, well, I could say about a good 14 minutes left here. You got right. Time does fly by fast. You mentioned Kanye West. Kanye, it does, yes. Kanye West he's a beautiful artist, but he had a public bout with you know, mental health challenges. And during this time, that we're in, a lot of people have, you know, mental health challenges, right? Because these are trying times. But a lot of people don't trust the mental health system. A lot of people don't trust the health system in general, right? But mental health has always been, you know, a mixed bag in the Black community. But it's so crucial right now. So how can people like you, who's in the mental health field, begin to, you know, create an environment where people, you know, begin to take care of their mental health? I know that's such a broad question. We don't have a lot of time, but I do want to begin to explore this because I think that's important.
Is this in relation to our artists or just general population?
This is relation to the time that we're in terms of social the social justice and the movement that we're in right now, and the artists, right? Should the artists who have should they be public about it? Should they talk about it? And the people who are in the social justice movement who are dealing heavy with this situation, you know, who are not seeking mental health treatment, how can we encourage them to do so? Because a lot of them don't trust the health system, and the mental health is a part of the overall general health system. So let's start with that. Let's start with the social justice people who are going through it, who are in the thick of it, and they are experiencing, and they're not seeking mental health relief. How can we bridge those gaps? How can we bring them to an understanding that it's important? And then also, how can we help the mental health system to reach out to them?
Well, I think when we talk about mental health, we have to separate it from a system, because Black mental health Black mental health cannot exist in a healthy way within any system here. So the minute you say mental health system, you're talking about something that will not prioritize Black bodies, Black minds, Black hearts, Black spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And so this mental health system is set up the way white people do it, which is very individualistic. There's no social accountability, and there's no recognition that the society is what's informing the illness.
Mm.
What we need to do is have a conversation about our mental health and call it whatever feels good to us. For some of us, it may be, you know, calling it the feels. For some people, they be calling it heart work, whatever. Whatever feels good to us, we can decide that as a community. But we need to think about how do we process the things that happen to us, the experiences, the feelings in community. How do we center our wellness, our bodies, our mind, hearts, and spirits, and what are the strategies that we think work best for us? And so I always tell people when we have this conversation that mental health is everywhere, particularly for Black people, but for everybody, because it's how I'm treated at a grocery store. It's how I'm treated when I go into a bank. It's how I'm treated on a school campus. So all those things are about my mental health. I don't just walk around with anxiety because everything's going well. I walk around with anxiety because I'm thinking about how these people are going to see me, approach me, treat me, right? Mm-hmm. Without that, the evidence of this is that Black mental health completely shifts when you go to another country. When you travel outside of America, particularly to a country with other Black people, ask them if they experience mental health symptoms. If so, it's very nominal, because what they're used, what the all that tension in their body they're used to carrying, there's nothing around them to trigger that anymore. So our mental health, the part of the issue is it's environmental, and the mental health system talks about environment in a non-racialized way, as though racism has nothing to do with our environment.
Because in the DSM-5, what is that book there, the Bible of this psychotherapy world? It doesn't speak to race in that book, right?
Like, I talk about this all the time. No, it doesn't have a diagnosis for racist, which I think it should. It doesn't have a modifier for people experiencing racism. And I think if you harbor racial animus and that's clear, then you'll ask to get a diagnosis for that. Because you're the sick one, not me.
Right.
I'm not sick. Mm-hmm. Why do I get the diagnosis for the effects of you? But you don't get a diagnosis for carrying the sickness. That's you said that doesn't make any sense. So when it comes to our activists, you know, we have to empower them and support them within the community to inform us about what they need and how we can develop and process spaces for them to heal and to process within the community itself.
Absolutely. Powerful. Absolutely. And I will add that, you know, when we are, you know, aiming to heal in an environment that got us sick, that's just like an alcoholic creating wellness at an open bar. It do not work. It does not work. So in that vein, it's very important for us to, as Thea was even saying, be exposed to something different, because this society in America, especially the inner cities, again, it's finite. We need to unplug and plug into the infinite if we even want to have a chance. And anything surrounding mental health in the inner city, there are dollars attached to it, just like policing, just like education, and all of these things go back to systemic racism. Mm-hmm. So we have to deal with it from another lens, another vantage, because once you track the money, you know, we end up right back where we always been. That's sick, that's oppressed, and that's looking for someone to help us, needing someone to do something for us. When we have enough resources and enough might and power as a people that can persevere through it all to do it for ourselves. So what we going to do for us is the question.
I love that. Defining, you know, the challenges that we have to speak to what we're experiencing, and then, you know, sort of fold it into ourselves. But if you talk about, and that's one significant way that we should definitely be approaching. There's still a lot of people who are impacted by the normal way, the normal pathways to mental health services. What can be done there, in your opinion, to help to sort of change their thinking? What can therapists do? What can mental health practitioners do who think like you to begin to, because a lot of people still get mental health services in school, also through their job. So so those are still points of entry for a lot of people into the mental health system. And some of these people are artists, some of these people are social justice workers. So what can therapists like you do, Thea, to begin to impact those realms and make sort of, you know, small changes until the bigger changes can be made?
Absolutely. They can start by joining the Black or the Brain, which is our cohort. We focus on decolonizing mental health, and we partner with education decolonizers, healthcare decolonizers, just an intersection of folks that look at this as a universal issue. Not in one space, in one room. They can begin to challenge their workspaces to reevaluate policies, practices, even the forms that you sign in. I believe the form should ask, are you experiencing systemic oppression? That's not on the internet. You are. So why would you have it on the form, right? So make sure that their hiring practices are being checked. Is there anything on this application about social justice awareness, or working not just the like typical, I work with diverse people. No. I want to know, are you active in the dismantling of systemic that oppress Black people? Like, anybody can BS their way through a diversity question, but I want to know, you guys get in the game before I hire you, right? So I think can disrupt education in terms of the actual grad programs that people are going through, you know, that those programs are training them to think white, right? So we can disrupt those programs, and the students are great at doing that and holding the professors and stuff accountable and those measures. So, I mean, those are just some of the things that we've done and we've supported people in doing, but it's an ongoing thing to, like, really go back and say, this system was not designed with us in mind. We have our own thoughts and views on how to be healthy and how to be well. And it starts with not having to deal with white supremacy.
Say that.
That's our biggest issue. You want to help us?
And so we bring all this together in a few minutes that we have. And I think about the, we're talking about the intersections, right? Those things that you just mentioned, Thea, you know, I believe that an artist with a big enough platform, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be in a song, but they, you know, when an artist lets out a project, they do so many press junkets. And the, for them to begin to speak about, you know, hey, look, we need to look at how we address mental health and the Black community. Or we need to look at this, this, and this, to begin to seed that information. And then people like the work that you're doing, Thea, the work that you're doing, O'Shea, Thea, with the Black of the Brain, And I want, before we go, I want to tell, I want you to tell people how they can connect to that if they have an interest.
Yeah.
You know, the pathway is smoothed out just a little bit more if the voices who have the influence, I believe, can speak to these issues, then they can smooth out the pathway a little bit more. So when you speak to it, it's not as if you're someone, a lone wolf, trying to make, you know, sense of something to people who really don't want it to make sense. That's
right. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, this is, our point, I think, is that I think about Melanie Fiona, right? She talks about wellness on her platform all the time. She partners with people to do that. But I guess we're saying not everybody has to be her or be a artist who uses their platform in that way. That as long as we have some that are out there doing it, that's great.
Taraji's doing
but
it
we just,
as well.
But we got to be careful of people saying that everybody, because they may not, listen, no offense, no shame, but when Ice Cube went out there talking about he was seeking for all black people, I need to see the paperwork. I didn't vote for Ice Cube to seek for me. And then
right,
it can become dangerous.
Yes, it can.
I walk out here like, I'm on a platform speaking for black folks. And it's like, I know how comfortable I am with that. Because they may not have the lineage, the study, they may not know what they're, you know,
right,
I don't know.
Right.
They're going to be inspired, but do I want them speaking on behalf of all black folks? I don't know. That's a dangerous quote,
right.
Mark. That's a dangerous quote.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
It's
like,
a very dangerous
quote.
It's a dangerous
quote. Those
who
have gone through
on.
The journey, you know, it may be different.
All right. Well, we have about three or so minutes left. Yeah, tell the audience again how they can connect to you, how they can connect to get your book, and if there's a mental health practitioner or educator who wants to be connected to the Black of the Brain, how they can get connected
Absolutely.
To you.
We'd love to connect with you through MarleyAyo.com. When you go to Marley.io, you'll be able to click on the Black of the Brain icon and learn about our community and how to be a part of it.
Yes.
Excellent. And O'Shea, just even though we put up connections to you, just tell people how they can get connected to you and all the amazing work that you and your amazing wife are doing.
Yes. To connect with us, you can connect with us at Internal Balance. retreats.com, internalbalanceretreats.com, and everything will pop up. And on social media, you can find me under Stillwaters Network. Again, Stillwaters Network. And you Google our names, everything will come up. O'Shea Luja, O-S-H-E-A-L-U-J-A, O'Shea Luja.
And just remember, like the song says, still run, waters run deep, so there's nothing shallow going on.
Absolutely. Mark, for the people that don't know, please tell people how they can get in contact with you, brother.
In your
Absolutely,
book.
Absolutely, brother. They can go to markrwinkler.com. I'm so vain, I put my name in there. Mark R. Just connect to markrwinkler.com and everything that I'm doing. I include information about my new book, A Reason to Change, The De-Radicalization of Saul Winston, which is coming out. It's going to be released under Island Day Press, which is a press started by my beautiful wife. So I'm very excited about that. So, yeah, we got about 1 minute left. Is there any closing words as our special guests that you would like to leave with the people? Any encouraging words?
Just to follow your joy and expand your bliss. It's all about black bliss. If we can imagine it, we can have it.
Mm. Follow your joy, follow your bliss. I think black people, they're not told that enough. They're not told that they have the right to, as Thea always says, access your joy. It's there. It is all around, right? I mean, we get, we have issues, we have problems that we deal with. But when you have a problem, go outside and you see the sun shining. That's a moment of joy. Get lost in that moment, right? Yes, the other problem's going to be there. It's still going to be there. But there's so much to joy that we can connect to. O'Shea, any last encouraging words, brother, as we close out?
Yes, indeed. I would say for everybody out there to please know that you are the very miracle that you've been asking for. You are that. Mm. So just be what you've been asking for.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful, brother. That's beautiful. All right. But Thea, it's always a pleasure. You know we're going to have you back on again, so just know that. Because that's the truth.
Yes, you got real estate over here. Yes.
Yeah,
community to build. It's done.
And everyone, yes. And everyone else, we thank you for joining us, and we welcome you back again. We'll be back in another couple of weeks on the other side. So thank you for joining us, and we appreciate your participation. Take care now.
Thank you.
Yes, peace.